Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in and tuning up. This is Scott Jensen with my Ancient Wisdom Modern Health Podcast. Here, I share and explain how to get and stay healthy with Tai Chi, Qigong, and Kung Fu, mixing interviews with incredible people and my own insights and experiences. We look for timeless wisdom and proven practices to be healthy and happy today. Tigers are one of the most powerful animals in the world. The tiger has perhaps the fiercest charge of any land animal, and it has amazing leaping ability. An adult tiger can leap up to 33 feet. Tigers are also known to have many other qualities and are deeply admired by the Taoist and Chinese artists and sages, and amongst all others, Chinese martial artists. But what qualities do we admire about the tiger, and what can we learn from the tiger? Soon, we will release our second Kung Fu Animal Power program, the tiger. The tiger is known for being dynamic and teaching how to use 100% of your energy and being able to develop a very explosive, powerful, sudden movement. The tiger is going to be a great course, and I hope you can join us soon. Today we're going to talk about the tiger. First, we're going to look at some amazing facts and abilities about tigers. Then we'll discuss what the Taoists find fascinating about the tiger and admire about the tiger. And then we'll see how these ideas and others are shown in classical Chinese martial arts and Tai Chi Chuan. The tiger has the fiercest charge of any animal that I am aware of. Tigers can leap 33 feet, which is an amazing distance. They have a very good height on these leaps as well. Tigers can swim very well, and being out in the middle of a lake or a river on a boat is no guarantee that the tiger might not come out after you. Tigers are mostly solitary. However, they like to have a rather large territory, and they're happy if the edges of their territories overlap other tigers, and they're able to share their sort of boundary areas. This is particularly true if there's one female tiger or more and male tigers, then they'll allow the boundaries to overlap a little bit more. If one of the tigers makes a particularly large kill, the tiger is willing to share it with the other tigers. I think there's a certain aspect to that of they just need to show off and brag a little bit about this amazing beast that they took down. This is sort of an interesting social behavior between the tigers. They're not quite cooperating in the sense that lions do. However, they're also able to socially adjust their borders and not have a massive conflict between the various tigers in a large area. Tigers typically, when they hunt, they will find a good spot and then set up an ambush from which they can launch a very powerful sudden attack once the prey that they're looking for comes by. The way that the tigers will set up this ambush shows extreme cunning and intelligence. They're very difficult to detect when they're setting up these sort of ambushes. The tiger specializes in getting right behind the prey's neck and snapping it. So that's a very sudden. The tiger will leap and try and control the prey and bring it down, but the actual kill is really quick. The thing that the Taoists, among others, admired about the tiger was its intelligence. Along with the tortoise, the tiger was considered to be super intelligent in a category above all of the other animals. While the crane might be a very intelligent animal, it's not in this category with the tortoise and the tiger. I always think about the tortoise moving so slowly. The tortoise has to really think carefully about where it's going to go and remember where it's been so it doesn't get stuck. The tiger, however, I think the tiger is just in its category of that's the way they are. They're the ones that have to control the population of the largest animals in the forest and make sure that they don't become overpopulated and cause massive damage to the forest. This is the niche that the tiger operates in. It's going to control the population of the very largest animals. It is an important ecological niche. Being a huge, fierce, ferocious tiger, well, that's just the kind of thing that kung fu people like. So let's take a look at the tiger in different classical combat-oriented martial arts. The tiger has been one of the traditional animals of the Shaolin Temple, and within different systems in the Shaolin Temple, it can mean different things. Typically, the tiger is actually representing having strong bones. And at first you might think, oh, I think about the tiger having really strong muscles. It has really strong muscles. But the really strong muscles are all pulling on the bones, and the bones have to be really strong so they don't get snapped by those strong muscles. And the way that bones in any animal are strengthened is by the action of the muscles pulling on them. So with tigers having just this natural development of massive musculature, they develop massive bones with a lot of density and strength to go with them. So the idea of developing your bones and developing the health of your bones and building up the strength of your bones through your kung fu training is a fundamental concept. Some people will do exercises designed to gather chi into their bones and stimulate their marrow. When you're doing the rotational movements where your joints are gently circling and twisting and you're using the various muscles of your body that are attaching to your bones and moving them, all of these movements serve to stimulate the bones to strengthen themselves. In traditional Chinese medicine, the tiger's bone is considered to be one of the rare and very powerful herbs. In the modern world, this is a terrible thing for tigers because it's a lot easier for us to kill them now than it was in the past. There's really no reason to use tiger bone because we can concentrate calcium and all the other minerals just fine and take them in vitamins and supplements. These days, tiger bone is more of a secret ingredient marketing ploy for herbal formula that costs a lot of money, I would say. However, the tiger bone was considered in the medicine to be one of those ingredients that would be put in various formulas. And if you couldn't use a tiger's bone, unfortunately, the next up was to use a dog bone. Not a dog treat bone, but actually the bones of a dog. And certain animals were considered to have a stronger, different chi, to have an ability to be more evolved or to cultivate themselves or to cultivate their chi in one way or another. This is one of the things that caused Taoists to admire certain animals more than others. For example, the deer, every part of the deer is considered to be medicine, while no part of a sheep is considered to be medicine, yet the sheep and the deer eat exactly the same food. So why is one medicine and magical and the other isn't? Well, I don't think I can answer that question for you, but this is how things are regarded by the ancient Taoists. So looking from the Shaolin perspective, one of the things that they would look for in the tiger was that you were going to develop the bones of a tiger. Your bones are going to become very, very strong. Now, another image from the tiger that's in different martial arts in China, including the Shaolin tradition, is to look at the tiger's neck. The idea behind the tiger's neck is that as the tiger's walking along the jungle floor in its stealthy mode and it's moving quietly and its head is moving, its neck is working to support this really large and powerful head. And there's a certain lifting quality of strengthening the neck from the inside and front and lifting of the back. And this is about your head position and your neck position. Your head and neck position is actually very, very important in martial arts. If your head and neck position is strong and you actually have a strong neck and strong, large neck muscles, and those muscles are providing a lot of support and stability for your head, this is an advantage in martial arts. If you have a very, very weak neck, it will be easier for your neck to be injured if somebody strikes your neck strongly, or if they strike your head very strongly. Being struck very strongly at the neck or head, your neck could be broken. The actual whipping action on your neck could cause it to be broken by the action of a strike to your head. So having a very, very strong neck is actually a very good trait for a martial artist. In general, I think this is one of the weakest areas of preparation for most modern martial artists. It's only the people that are really seriously thinking about getting into the ring and sparring where they could actually be punched heavily in the head or perhaps in strong grappling techniques. The people that are facing that situation in the near future take the time to really build up their neck muscles. So having a very strong neck supported by a strong structure of the upper back and all the muscles there, this is a very good quality for martial artists to develop, and this is one that we learned from the tiger. There is a hand position known as the tiger claw. There's a number of hand positions that are claws and they mimic different animals. One is the dragon's claw. The dragon's claw is the largest one. Your fingers and palm are totally spread wide open. The maximum distance between each finger, the palm is spread, maybe slightly curved, and then all of the fingers are just gently curving with a little bit of tension inward. That is your dragon's claw. The tiger's claw is a little bit smaller. Your palm is still spread, but now the second joint of fingers is bent most of the way closed. It's like your fingers are making a little bit of an L or a hook, but they're not necessarily all the way closed. There's distance between all of your fingers. Your thumb is also somewhat bent. On the thumb, obviously it's the first and second joint that are bent to make the thumb position. So that's a tiger's claw. There's also the leopard's paw. The leopard's paw is very similar to the tiger. However, in this case, the fingers are pressed closed together, so there's no space between the forefingers. Although the fingers are bending at the middle joint, they're tightly closed, and this is a fist that's usually used to strike the throat with a very narrow fist formation that will be able to miss the jaw and sort of fit in there. All of those, the dragon claw, the tiger claw, the leopard's paw, are very useful for strengthening your hands and developing hand strength. There is an entire martial art, it's a very rare martial art called tiger claw kung fu. There's one group in New York City that I'm aware of in the United States that practices that, and they have for a long time. There's undoubtedly other groups in China. It's a bit more of a southern style. Like eagle claw, it emphasizes developing massive hand strength. The tiger claw practitioners like to practice this tiger claw technique. There's many different ways that they use it, from just seizing your arm to trying to seize specific muscles and other techniques. And they like to work on developing their grip so that if you're a master tiger claw practitioner, you can grab the bark on a tree with your fingertips and then tear it off. So this is the kind of special skill that the tiger claw practitioners learn to develop. In past podcasts, I've discussed the martial art known as Xingyichuan, or Foreman Will Boxing. Xingyichuan begins with five element fists that are five fundamental powerful techniques that you learn. After learning a few linking forms that combine different elements, then you learn 12 animals, and these are short forms, or maybe good techniques. They're not very long like Shaolin forms, so the tiger is one of the 12 animals of Xingyichuan. The movements of the tiger in Xingyi are both a double palm push in the simplest method, and then a complex chin-aw technique, which is able to lock the arms around the opponent's chest, as another variation. There's a number of different ways that people will perform Tiger depending on which specific style of Xing Yi Quan and which clan or family that they learned it from. Pretty much all of the styles of Xing Yi Quan practicing the Tiger use an opening technique to separate the opponent's arms. And then they'll strike very explosively and suddenly with both palms. This attack is very formidable and can easily knock someone down. What I particularly like about the Xing Yi method of doing this type of attack is the way that they move internally when they do it. And this is the lesson that the Tiger provides to the Xing Yi people. And that's that when the Tiger leaps, if you imagine the Tiger leaping and its body is stretched out in the air and its front claws are extended, its front legs are reaching out, the whole body of the Tiger is extended, the back feet have just left the ground. At this point, the spine of the Tiger is very open. It's opened the front of its spine, and then as it lands on the prey, it's seizing the prey with its claws, then its entire body pulls down. So it's not just like it's pulling with its claws or its front legs. It's actually using the entire power of its core, of its spine, and the front of its body to then pull down. So this is the technique that we like to learn, this body method from the Tiger in Xing Yi Quan. So as you're doing the opening movement where you're intercepting the opponent's arms, you're using your entering technique at that moment, as you're separating and opening the opponent's up, that's when you're opening your body up on the inside. You're sort of opening up your spine. You're opening up the bow of your spine. And then when you strike, then you're closing the center of your body just a little bit. You're sort of crunching forward. This contraction of the whole front of the body at once, then that combines with your shoulder blades and your following step and your palm strike. And it's very, very powerful and it's very, very sudden. So throughout martial arts, when you're looking at a technique which is using both palms, it's a double palm push, almost any art that does that, that could be referred to as a technique that's tiger or tiger-like or has a tiger energy to it. Recently, we discussed the lessons of the crane. The crane is an important animal in Tai Chi. There's a number of movements named after the crane. White crane stands on one leg. White crane cools its wings. But Tai Chi can also be considered to have quite a bit of tiger in it, not in the way of being fierce and moving suddenly and fast during your Tai Chi form. For most people, that would be very foreign. If you were doing the Chen-style Tai Chi, you might have some very sudden and explosive movements there. But for most people, the Tai Chi is very, very slow and soft and gentle, and it's hard to imagine the tiger in there. But Tai Chi is filled with the double palm push, one of the classic moves of the Tiger. If we look at the movement of brush knee push hand, where we're stepping forward with one foot in front, and then we pull down with the front hand and we're pushing or striking with our right palm, this is also a very Tiger-like movement. This sort of movement is found in the Hung family fist, Hungar. Hungar is considered to be a tiger crane style. Again, Hungar has a lot of animals in it. They have some really good animal forms, including the leopard and many others. But the tiger is very prominent in Hungar, and this shows their Shaolin roots. And the technique that they use is very, very similar to brush knee push hand in Tai Chi. When you really look at the formation of the original Tai Chi techniques, and many of the ones that we're still practicing right now, they're really classical Shaolin techniques, and it's the body method, the philosophy, and the strategy that make it Tai Chi, rather than the actual basic formation of the double palm push or the brush knee push hand. Those can show a lot of overlap with the other styles. Certainly in Northern Shaolin, we do some very powerful palm pushes, and it's easy to think, oh, you do a palm push, you push someone with your palms. Well, how dangerous could that be? You know, what kind of self-defense is that? You push them and then they just come right back. Well, it depends what you push them into or what you push them over to begin with or what you push them in front of. All of those are big factors. So pushing somebody into the wrong place at the wrong time can be an incredibly powerful defensive maneuver. Even if you're not in a situation where you're going to be able to push someone into a hazard or onto something or in front of a speeding locomotive, the push is still very powerful. To illustrate the power of the double palm push, I would like to share a story told to me by one of my fellow Northern Shaolin instructors. This story concerns a fairly small woman who was one of his students and studied really hard. After learning for many years, she had some skill, but unfortunately, she ended up with a partner who was a lot bigger than she was and turned out to be very aggressive. So her large male partner was threatening and abusing her. At that moment, she had had enough. And even though she was a lot smaller than him, she used her palm push. And the key with the Northern Shaolin palm push is that it's very, very long. So that we start the push and then we go forward really far as we can step into a deep load stance, reaching our palms all the way out. This push can cover a great deal of distance. And at the beginning, if you get someone off balance, you will be able to propel them pretty far behind their feet. So in this case, this guy who was bullying her and abusing her, she pushed strongly. His shoulders went far behind where his feet was. He was completely unprepared, not expecting it whatsoever. He fell back really heavily, landing with his shoulders and head on the floor first, and then the rest of his body second. And this nearly knocked him out. It completely ended the confrontation. And then she had to call the ambulance to take him to the hospital and get some attention because he was so badly banged up. She might have weighed half of his weight. And in this case, she was able to use the palm push extremely effectively. She summoned her tiger energy there, and she was fierce in that moment and sudden, and she caught him by surprise. That tiger girl won out, so I like it. If we think about the state of mind of a fighter in a championship bout, they're in an intense fight against another very intense martial artist. That state of mind is not the state of mind that you have when you're walking down the street with your dog. It's a totally different state of mind. It's a different level of energy. If you're going for a walk and instead of walking down with your dog in the quiet neighborhood, unfortunately, you walked in the wrong place at the wrong time and you were suddenly attacked. Well, the person that's attacking you, the person that's trying to mug you, they're not at the walking the dog level of energy. Their level of energy is a lot closer to that championship fighter. They're coming at you revved up. So can you change your state? Can you turn on your tiger power and be ready to defend yourself quickly, instantly perhaps? This is one of the skills that you need as a martial artist. Now, another time that you want to absolutely do your best, do your 100% best if you're aspiring in martial arts is anytime you're with your teacher. When I think about doing your best, I'm reminded occasionally of my teacher, Bira Almeida, who's known as Mestre Accordion. He's one of the top grand masters of the art of capoeira from Brazil in the entire world. And one of the main people, if not the person who truly spearheaded the introduction of capoeira into the United States. I studied with Bira Almeida in the 1980s, and I remember he had a sign on his school that said, "When the student tries 100%, the teacher tries 100%. When the student tries 99%, the teacher tries 50%. When the student tries 98%, the teacher doesn't try at all." And this showed how he expected you to participate in class. That if you wanted him, the Grand Maestre, to put forth his best effort to teach you, hey, you better be on top of your game too. If you're doing your 100% best, there's nothing more that they can ask for. If the student is doing their best effort, they're trying 100%, I'm always delighted. They may not be performing well yet. They may not be doing what I want exactly. But so long as they're making their best effort and they have the grit and determination to keep trying, I know that they will succeed. When I'm thinking about the tiger, I think about all of these qualities, the strong bones, developing a strong neck, which is able to really support your head, being able to open your spine and use the contractive power of your spine suddenly. Those are amazing qualities to learn from the tiger. When I teach Kung Fu Animal Power, the tiger, we also focus on some of these qualities. In particular, I focus on the virtue of being dynamic and doing your best. I like to teach the tiger first out of all the 18 animals because I think that the most important lesson, if you're going to complete all 18 animals, is to do your best, to do your best with every animal. But even beyond doing your best, and some people do really need a little help learning how to do this, what I really mean by being dynamic is having a burst of energy, being able to have the charge of the tiger. We can't focus and perform at 100% all the time. We need to rest. We need to have time when we're taking care of ourselves, when we're rejuvenating ourselves, when we're doing other things. But there are times in life where we have to bring the full power of our being into focus in the moment. And these moments are when we can really shine, when we can really put the full capacity of ourselves out there and do something amazing. We can't do that every day. You can't perform a great play or create a great work of art or make brilliant, wise decisions or be amazingly compassionate and helpful every day, all day long. None of us are built that way. Part of the lesson of the tiger is that you do need to rest. But the most important part is to be able to take those moments when you really need to and rev up your engine. Most of the day, we don't need to go 100%, and it would be a mistake to do so. We would wear ourselves out. If you have a car and you drive it as fast as the engine can go, every time you get in it, you just zoom around rah, 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 as fast as you possibly can, your car's going to wear out pretty soon. However, to be successful in life, and in particular, to be successful in martial arts, you do need the ability to rev up your tiger power, to go to full power, to go to all the lights are blinking red, full power, revved up. Once in a while, we really need that capacity, and you want to have it. And in our lives, we need to use the tiger power to get going. We need to use the tiger power to break through our own obstacles, through our own inertia, through our own laziness, through our own indifference. Use your tiger power to awaken your passion and then attack life and get what you want from life. Seize your goals and help other people. You may be walking along a path in paradise, and the trees are covered in fruit. But if you don't reach out and pick them, and you still expect someone to come along and actually put it in your mouth for you, you're probably going to be pretty hungry. And unfortunately, life is like that. If you're sitting at home and waiting for success to knock on the door and kick it in and burst its way into your apartment, into your house, you're probably going to be waiting a long time. So I suggest that you practice a little bit your tiger power, that when there are those moments where you really do need to work to progress, to be a genius for a moment, give yourself permission to just turn on the tiger power and do it. Part of the special energy of the tiger is the suddenness, the explosiveness of the tiger. The tiger's 100% burst is more like the supernova. It's not a long, drawn-out affair. There's often a period of preparation or coiling or gathering or rest, and then we have the moment where the energy is released. After that release, then there's going to be a period of rest, of rejuvenation, of coiling, gathering, and preparing for the next time that you have this big, sudden release. This doesn't necessarily have to be physical. It could be a mental or emotional moment where you're really being compassionate or you're really using your intelligence. All of us are capable of genius in different ways, but to reach that, we need to extend ourselves. Now, we may need to prepare for a bit, but when we want to, you can do things that are a bit extraordinary, a bit more than the normal, a bit more than the everyday. And what I encourage you to do is to create opportunities in your own life where you can shine very brightly, and then to give yourself those moments and enjoy them. It may be a little hard to do this out in public in the normal fashion during these times, but using your creativity, I am sure that you can still find many opportunities to help others, to help the world, and to help improve yourself. Thank you for listening. Please be careful and take appropriate actions and plan what you need to do. And until our next podcast, keep moving, stay well, and be happy. Thank you for joining me and listening in. Please remember to subscribe and share. If you have questions, please send them to ask@ancientwisdommodernhealth.com.